Hyvää iltaa, hyvät kuulijat. Minä olen Jani Alkoholisti. Tämä on Helsingin A-radio. Good evening, good listeners. My name is Jani and I'm an alcoholic. This is the AA Radio of Helsinki. Today we are in Barcelona in the conference of young people of AA in Europe, and with me I have four members of AA, and we are going to talk about recovery from alcoholism and AA and Europa and all sorts of stuff related to those things. And first, let's have a little introductory round. And please, can you tell us something about who you are?
Hi, my name is Michał. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety day is the 21st of May 2013, so I'm just a bit above 6 years sober. I'm Polish originally. I got sober in Poland. I'm living in Czech Republic now, where I attend AA meetings regularly. And AA is something that saved my life and keeps on saving my life and keeps on improving my life. And yeah, that would be all for me. Good evening.
Thank you.
I'm Angela. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is March 7th, 2011. Originally, I'm from the United States. I got sober in Ohio. Since then, I've lived in Prague in the Czech Republic and Istanbul, Turkey. And currently, I'm living in Almaty, Kazakhstan. This was my seventh year IPA. So that's a little about me. Thank you.
Hey, everybody. I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic from Canada. It's my first year IPA. You know, what can I say? We're a fellowship who get sober and stay sober and help others stay sober. And, you know, the magic and the spirit of that is alive and well here in Barcelona today. And just super grateful to be asked to be part of this and to be here now. Thanks.
Thank you.
My name's Paul. I'm an alcoholic. I'm from England, obviously, from my accent. My sobriety date is March 29, 2004, and this is the fourth Europa so far.
Thank you. And yes, I'm Jani, and I'm an alcoholic from Finland, Helsinki. I've been sober for 11 years now, and this is my third Europa. Could someone tell something about Europa, what it is, and what's it all about? What about Paul? You've been in the board.
What is Europa all about? So in a nutshell, young people have been given or wanted the opportunity to make their own convention, their own conference, run by young people for young people. And as I got into the fellowship, I was 32 years old, and I still had a lot of partying left to do without the aid of alcohol. And it can be intimidating to go into a social situation without the crutch of alcohol propping me up, not giving me the confidence. You know, I want to be able to dance, but I need alcohol, and yet I can't drink. So, and then all of a sudden it was in Prague, 2014, that was my first Europa conference convention, and my eyes got opened to how much fun and energy was available for sober alcoholics without alcohol. And you can do, you can party in a safe and sober environment. And I just thought, yeah, this is for me. This is for me. I need to incorporate this type of energy, this type of injection of energy into my recovery, which, you know, I found it lacking in my, you know, home-to-home normal AA. And Europa ticked a lot of the boxes for me. Now that I'm a little bit older, I'm thinking, man, this is too much for me, and I'm starting to get tired really, really quickly. I made a mistake in my introduction. This is actually my seventh Europa. So, it ticks the boxes for me for giving me something to look forward to. I do plenty of conventions anyway, but Europa is the most high-octane-fueled AA event that I attend every year. So, in a nutshell, that's what Europa is for me.
Thank you. Angela, you've been organizing this. Can you tell something about that, and how is this, what's the Europa board?
Sure. So the Europa convention has a advisory board. So the advisory board is made up of people that were on the host committees of previous conventions. So when I was living in Prague, we bid at Malta to bring the Europa convention to Prague. So I was part of that host committee. And then after we had the convention in Prague, I was one of three members from Prague that rotated onto the Europa board. And after you rotate on, the general term of service is for 4 years. Then you can maybe serve for some other roles. There's all kinds of service roles within the board. And so I served on the board for 5 years. It was amazing, really important for my recovery. So this was actually my last year on the board. I'm rotating off now. That means new people come on and bring new experience and, you know, the spirit of rotation we have. So it stays young and it stays exciting. Yeah, so that's a little bit about the board.
Thank you. Tim, you said this is your first time here.
That's right.
Can you tell what are your impressions, and can you tell us also a bit about your history and recovery?
Sure. Yeah, it's my first Europa. It's not my first young person's event, and I guess I'll just start by saying that I'm 45, and I was messaging some friends back home in Canada and telling them I was coming to the young person's convention of AA, and they were like, "Oh, young person, hey?" And you know, being resistant like I am to most things, I was like, you know, the last five AA meetings you've been to, and this person I was talking was also 45. I'm like, were you the youngest person at the meeting? And she had nothing, you know, like, because she was the youngest person at the meeting. And I'm glad you kind of talked about not getting this same thing at home groups, and it's not exclusive to any country, you know. What's happening here is people getting lit up in recovery and choosing life, and you know, a lot of us came around and thought that our lives were over if we were going to stop drinking and drugging, and that's just not the case. Like, our lives get to just begin, whatever age you are. And so yeah, Europa is pretty special for me. I wasn't asked to come. I was told that I was coming. And sometimes that's the way it works around here. And I'm grateful today, you know, and I didn't resist that. And just to see so many people, you know, like, we live in a time that Alcoholics Anonymous has never been less anonymous, you know. At least in North America, it's like trendy to, like, how many times have you been to rehab? And people know about AA, and people are seeking help all the time, more and more at a younger age, and in a lot of cases before it really gets started, which warms my heart. I have a 22-year-old daughter, and fortunately she seems indifferent to drugs and alcohol. And, you know, she watched me go through the ringer, quote unquote, you know. And one of the reasons I keep coming is because, you know, our primary purpose is to carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic. And you know, I show up because I want to make sure there's room for the next guy to show up, and the next guy, and the next guy, and the next guy. And coming to things like this just really confirms that the meeting's going to be open tomorrow. So the guy who knows nothing about this is going to show up and maybe see one of us all shiny and stoked, and maybe get a little bit of hope like I got when I came here and I saw this. So yeah, it's pretty special. If you think you have a problem, you know, you probably do. Anyways, thank you.
Thanks. Mikolai, what's your story?
Michal, alcoholic. Yeah. So I got sober when I was 26 years old. I celebrated my 23rd birthday on a rehab. I went out and I was told by the therapists there that I should attend AA meetings. And I didn't like it that much because the AA meetings that I attended on the rehab and outside of the rehab were usually people that were older than me. And but at that time of my recovery, I was searching for differences. I didn't search for similarities. So I went to the meeting and I heard a story that the person is getting divorced, or they have problems with their children, or they have problems in their marriage, or like they have problems like at their jobs, which were kind of serious positions. And I couldn't identify because I was 26. I was having an entry position. I didn't have a wife. I didn't have children. I didn't have a family of my own. So it was very easy for me to say, I'm not like you. I'm not an alcoholic. So I started to search for meetings where there were people in my age group, because I firmly believe that the problems that you have when you're 25 are very different than the problems that you have when you're 35 or 45, and it's just basically life. Like this is a normal way how things go. So I found a group in Warsaw where I was living back then. Name was Youngsters in AA. So I decided, okay, this is the group for me. And I went there, and it turned out that they were youngsters 25 years ago when they established the group. So they were like 45 or something. So this plan went out of the window, but I didn't give up, which is something that is not, it was not back then something that was part of me, because I was a quitter. In AA, I learned how to not give up and how to continue the course of action that I have taken. So I found a meeting when there were some young people, and I started to hear stories with which I could identify. And then when this cracked and this opened, I started to hear the similar things also in the stories of people who were older than me. And this made me stay. But for me, Europa is a place where people who still like struggle to identify and still continue to search for differences and just basically say, no, I'm not like one of you, because you're older and you have different problems, can find people who have the same problems, who have their first serious relationship, first serious jobs, who just start families, who start marriages, and basically share this experience and talk with those people and see that like they're not alone. There are people who are like this. This is my second Europa. Last year in Vilnius, I was just blown away. Extremely inspired. I and other people from my home country, from Poland, decided that we will try to prepare a bit and bring Europa in the year 2020 and 20 to Poland, because the atmosphere is just amazing, and the things that can happen to the local AA because of Europa and to young people in AA thanks to Europa are just amazing. And I really like what I heard on one of the meetings, the definition of young person as one of the Europa members said is a person who is still willing to grow and to grow on the 12-step program and grow in AA. And I really, really like that, because like it's up to me to decide if I'm young or not. So yeah, that's it from me.
Thank you. Paul, how did you find your way to AA?
I didn't go through treatment or rehab. I stumbled through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, 2004. And I suppose, very briefly, I got to the point where my drinking was not fun anymore. It ceased to work for me. And if any alcoholic ever gets into that unfortunate situation, the choices are really, really limited. It's die an alcoholic death or try something new for the very first time. And I made a phone call. I made a phone call to the Alcoholics Anonymous phone number in England. And I spoke to a man, and he qualified me, because I did ask. I said, how do I know if I'm an alcoholic? And of course, he spoke about control. He spoke about choice. He spoke about powerlessness. And he said things like, you know, do you find that you reach for the bottle when the crap hits the fan? And I said, well, yeah, I do. And he said, do you find you reach for the bottle when crap
doesn't hit the fan. And I said, yeah. And I'd never really thought about that, those two, well, that second question, until that was asked of me. And he said, okay, Paul, so what I'm going to do is arrange somebody to continue to talk to you in more detail about what Alcoholics Anonymous is. So I went to my first meeting, and it was powerful. It was a lot to take on, and I quickly found out that in order to recover from alcoholism, I had to not drink like ever again. And people would candy coat it by saying, "Well, it's just one day at a time." But I'm thinking, well, that's what about when my daughter gets married? What about when I have to give her away as the father of the bride? And so a guy was saying, "Well, okay, when's the wedding? When's she getting married?" And I'm like, "But she's like 3 months old." And he's thinking, "So you're like 25 years into the future, potentially. Come back to the now. Come back to the present moment, and we will deal with your daughter's wedding if she ever gets married in 25 years' time." So it was simple things like that I had, because I couldn't see a future without alcohol. And so it was scary, it was intimidating, but what I got from that very first meeting was a sense of hope. And I've never had that sense of hope before. And I thought, whatever you guys have got, I want some of that. Because my life was in tatters. My relationship was on the brink of destruction. I was one of those high bottom drunks where I still retained my driver's license, my career, most of my health, from the outside anyway. So I came in, and within my second meeting, I was already assigned a sponsor, and I didn't know what that was. He took me through the 12-step program of recovery. Within 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, the obsession to drink had dissolved. I'd stopped wondering and worrying about taking a drink after about 4 or 5 weeks sober. Service was extremely prevalent in my initial part of my recovery, and people were asking me to open up the meeting. And I felt like I had the weight of the entire Alcoholics Anonymous globally on my shoulders. I had the key for this church hall. Maybe it was about 3 months sober. I don't think they would have trusted me at a month. But very quickly, I was doing that. And I had questions and questions and questions, and they encouraged me to keep asking questions. And gradually, I developed this relationship with a higher power, which they said, in order to recover, Paul, you have to develop a personal relationship with a higher power. Meetings, meetings and meetings, and fellowship and friendship, it's great. But when it's 3 a.m. in the morning and you wake up and you're spinning out of control because you can't stop thinking about a certain situation, and you feel too embarrassed to phone anyone up at 3 a.m. in the morning, you need to rely on something else. And so that, for me, was a higher power that I still understand no more today than I did when I first invented it. And that's carried me through. And like I said, that's initially how I arrived into AA. So, yeah, that's me.
Thank you. Let's talk about a bit about the program. What is the 12-step program? Tim, can you tell us something about that?
Sure. So it's a spiritual program, and when I first crash landed through the doors of AA, I actually didn't want to quit drinking. I had been drinking heavily, and my best thinking, I was like, maybe I'll try heroin. And so I started using heroin every day, and I stopped drinking. And needless to say, I was in for a whole other can of worms. And anyways, so I ended up in rehab, and that was my first introduction. And my first AA meeting, I heard the only wrong way to do this is alone. And that's always stuck with me, you know. And this was about 12 years ago. I was in my early 30s. And anyways, what are the 12 steps for me, and what does that mean for me? I mean, as far as I perceive it, and I've been taught and told, and I've observed in others, you know, it's an explicit a set of instructions on how we get sober and we stay sober and we find a new way to live, you know, and we you know, there's a lot of writing involved, and it's work, and some people think that's a four-letter word, and it is, but, you know, like, my whole life I've been resistant to anybody trying to tell me what to do, you know, until I'm ready to drop that shit and just take some direction. In my experience, like, the 12 steps don't really work for me, and, you know, it was suggested, and it continues to be suggested, that I work with somebody who's worked a set of steps themselves, who has a sponsor and uses their sponsor, who shows up on a regular basis to be a part of this thing. And, you know, it's kind of a, like, rip you apart and build you back up process. And like I said, there's instructions, and of course, people, places, and things, and perceptions are different. But basically, you know, the 12 steps for me are a recipe for, like, learning to love myself and being okay in my own skin, and you know, realize how I've been trying to change the way I felt for as long as I can remember, and booze was a way that I was able to do that, and I was able to feel comfortable in my own skin, and I was able to like myself a little, at least in the beginning. And and when that stopped working, you know, as I was already said, like, I moved on to bigger and brighter things, and with the 12 steps, like, it's an ongoing process, and it's not something like I do once and I'm cured. It's something that I integrate into my life, and there's a little bit of work I got to do every day. And as a result, you know, I learned to be okay most of the time. And I learned to not be so selfish, and to consider the thoughts and feelings of others. And I learned to that it's okay to make mistakes, you know, but if I'm aware of them and I can, I'm able to, like, amend that behavior in one way or another. And it teaches me about inventories and how I can always sort of quote unquote take stock of what's going on for me. It teaches me to stay current with other humans and tell other people what's going on for me so they can help me, you know. And it teaches me that I'm not alone. And, you know, like has been mentioned, it encourages me to cultivate a relationship with a God of my understanding. And, you know, there's no rules about what that has to look like. It can be Jesus. It doesn't have to be. You know, it can be the lamppost. It can be the group. It can be Buddha. And the important part is I believe, and I just try. And the more I do that, the more I feel a part of the species, and realize that, like, I spent most of my life not feeling part of the species, and I always wanted to be special and different, and I thought you guys would never understand me. And so the 12 steps, you know, helps me with all those things. And I believe we live in a spiritually sick time and in history, and, you know, the 12 steps kind of helps with, it's a spiritual solution for a spiritual remedy, illness, you know, and I hope that made some sense. Thank you.
Angela, how was it to start with the steps?
Yeah, so when I came into the program, I'm one of those people who, before I make any kind of decision, I want to research it. So it was quite obvious to me that my drinking was not normal from the get-go. But it seemed like, and I believe that it was, actually for me at that time, a better choice for me than living with myself without drugs or alcohol, because I was a sick person. before I ever started drinking. Before I decided to come to AA, I went to the library and I got a bunch of books, got the big book. I was reading that stuff, trying to figure out what it was. I didn't want to get myself into, you know, something that, some kind of cult or anything like that, you know? So I went and I got the books, and I got books that women had written about being in the program, because that was important for me too. As a woman, I wanted to know that there was something there for me. And then the first AA meeting that I ever went to was actually a women's meeting. I think that felt safer for me in the beginning. It was my first experience of a meeting, so I just thought this was how every meeting was. But I realize now that those women, as the newcomer, they made me the center of that meeting, and they all shared their journey from the beginning, how they ended up in the rooms. They were talking about the first step, which I didn't really know really what the steps were about at that point. And that was very emotional. And I was very touched. But at the same time, I think a lot of people's first reaction to coming to AA is it's like a whole nother language. Like there's steps, there's traditions, there's big books, and there's 12 and 12s. And I was a bit overwhelmed by all of that. And I thought, this like talking to people is really nice. And like these ladies are nice people. And they seem really genuine and they don't seem crazy. That's good. But I'm not really sure about all this other stuff, because they were like, you need to go to a big book meeting. And I was like, well, I don't know if I need that book. That seems a little bit like over the top, right? So my experience with AA was that in the beginning, I just sat in meetings for a while. I didn't get a sponsor. I didn't do any steps. And just from going to meetings, I was able to stay sober for 20 days, which does not sound like a lot of time to me now. But at that point, I was 25 years old, and that was the longest I'd been sober probably since I was 13. It was pretty terrible. I have to say, I was not happy in those 20 days. But the problem was that I did not change. I came and I sat in the rooms and I listened. And the point where that 20 days went back to 0 days was I was in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a Christmas, like before Christmas meeting or New Year's or something like that. And all of these people were really happy, and they were like dancing, they were talking, they were so excited to be there. And I just looked at those people and I thought, like, you know, they're different from me. I'm never going to be like these people. I don't know what's going on with them, but this isn't for me. Like, I can't be like that. I can't understand how people can be happy, can actually function and have friendships without alcohol. So after that meeting, I left that meeting, the AA party, and I went to my own kind of party. And that ended up in like a 3-day blackout with losing all of my belongings, car, purse, everything, you know. And when I woke up from that blackout, I was terrified. Like, how did that happen? And then I drank for a little bit longer after that, and it was darker. It was a really rough time in my life. It was really interesting, actually, because what finally made me open up to all of the work that I needed to do, and I knew that that's what AA was asking of me, and I wasn't ready to do that, even though I was miserable. What really brought me to that point, and we call it hitting bottom, it was actually my parents. You know, all throughout my life, my parents would always be there when I called, like, oh, you know, such and such thing happened. Like, oh, I need help with this. Oh, you know, I'm feeling really bad. I think I need to go to the hospital. I need to, like, talk to a psychiatrist, all this stuff. And they, like, swoop in and come and rescue me and all that stuff. And this one time when I called and I was like, Mom, I think I need to go to the doctor. And finally, my mom said, you know, I think you need to deal with that yourself. And that was obviously not easy to hear. I was a bit shocked. But as soon as I hung up that phone, that was the point where I was like, you know, I am ready. Like, I will do any of that stuff. I'll do the big book thing. Like, I will get a sponsor, whatever that is. Like, I'll do this 12 and 12 or whatever it is these people are talking about. I really needed that kind of slap in the face to tell me, like, this is my job. Like, if I want to get better, I need to do that work. So that was really a gift, actually. And I, of all of the things that my family has done for me, that's probably the biggest gift, is to just cut me loose and say, this is all on you now. Like, you're an adult. And so, yeah. Once I made that decision, then I really jumped in and did it, you know. And for me, it was really hard still. I started working with a sponsor. I started doing the steps. And I still felt like slitting my wrists for a little while until I was doing step four and step five. So in step four in the program is when we make an inventory of our lives. And then step five is when we share that with a sponsor or another trusted person. And that process for me was when that, you know, desire to drink just evaporated. And I finally, like, I just started to see all this stuff that I never saw before. Like, and when I think about a higher power, I don't really think about that as like a god or anything like that. It's more about like beauty in the world and having access to something beautiful. Because before I was able to feel that, it was all just, my basic feeling was that nothing's ever going to be okay no matter what. And my higher power for me is that feeling of no matter what, everything's going to be okay, which is like the complete opposite. Yeah, so it really is like, if you would have told me before I got sober that I was suffering from a spiritual malady, I would have told you where to go. My feeling was, I don't need God. The people who need God are weak. And now I realize that, like, really everybody needs a higher power in their life, whether they're alcoholic or not. And I'm just lucky because I'm alcoholic, that because it forced me to reach out for that in my life. And the steps are like that door that for those people who kind of reject the whole higher power and spirituality, we don't want it. But the steps kind of open that door and show us a way to access it without a lot of that religion and stuff that can be really scary. So that's kind of how the steps worked for me in the beginning, at least. And it's really a design for living after that.
Thank you very much. And if you feel like saying something, please raise your hand and you'll get the mic. Next, Mihal, I'm sorry I got your name wrong before. But I've heard many of us had all kinds of suspicions for AA and the program. Did you have any? And if you did, how did you came over those?
Obviously I'm from Poland. As most of people in Europe know, we have a mark of being an extremely religious country, very Catholic. So the AA in Poland, in 90% of cases, the meetings are happening in churches. So it's quite easy to make a connection that this is a Catholic program. This is linked with some sort of a religion. And religion, in my opinion, back then, it was not something cool, and I needed to be a cool person, you know. So like, I couldn't be religious, and there was a word God which I have really huge prejudice, because as Angela mentioned, for me, like, God, religion was something for weak people. It was It was a crutch. It was something for people who were not intellectually capable enough to comprehend the reality with their brain. They needed to have something to support themselves. I considered them quite pathetic, basically. And that was my approach. I was very prejudiced and very negative to the people of religion. And people from AA were in that group. I couldn't make a recognition between faith, between religion, and between spirituality. For me, it was something in one basket. It was marked with word lame, and I was not getting near it because I needed to be cool. So there was like a lot, but as was mentioned, like at one point, like you are just like basically left with no other opinion, like no other choices. I didn't finish university and I was like, okay, like, whoa, so I finished university. That's a great day. I think I'm going to go to an AA meeting. That was the last house on the block. I ran out of options. I tried everything from finding a girlfriend, any kind of philosophy. I was thinking about going to hypnosis. I was thinking about going to some sort of meditation retreat. I was like able to do anything, just not go to the AA meeting. So yeah, I was extremely, extremely prejudiced towards AA. But yeah, that was the last option. And at one day I just gave up and I decided, yeah, like I will go. Like this was on the rehab. I was like, okay, I will go and I will see. Like I'm already here, so there's nothing else to do anyway. And then when I went out, I continued to go to the meetings. And the thing is, like, if I'm not taking care of my thinking in these times that I'm desperate and I'm surrendered, it's coming back. So after coming to a couple of meetings, I decided, well, no, I think I was right. I think this is like, it's still pretty lame and I cannot be lame. And I didn't go to AA for that for quite a while. And it was not the most happy period in my life. Like I was pretty miserable individual. I think I was even more miserable than in the drinking period, in the last stage of my drinking. Because the relief that I got from getting alcohol into my body system was taken away. So I was just sitting with this misery the whole time. And this illusion, this like elusive feeling of getting the relief that alcohol was giving me, despite the consequences that I was suffering, was taken away. And it was just getting to the verge of depression. And again, it was the last house on the block. So I went there. And as I mentioned before, I tried to find some identification. I found the people who opened the crack in my, in my ego, where I could start to be more open-minded to other people's ideas. And then I lost that prejudice towards word God, and because it's just a word. All the ideology behind it is of my own making. And I also started to make the division between faith and between religion and between spirituality. And yeah, this was basically the beginning, but it was a rough start, but it was of my own making, because I was the person who made all the prejudice towards the word God, towards people of religion, who didn't see the distinction between faith and spirituality and religion, because of my pride and narcissism, and basically thinking how better I am than most of the people who are around me.
Things in AA is service. Paul, can you explain what service means?
Okay, service on, there's lots of levels of service. Group level, there's intergroup level, there's region level, there's world service, you know, for your country's general service office, etc. I've had experience on group service level, intergroup level, and I think that's it so far. Well, if you're considering Eurepa as a region, then that could be a region level as well. It was told to me in the very beginning, you know, service will keep you sober, and to some degree that there's a lot of truth in that statement, because it gives me the commitment to turn up, to make the tea, to make the coffee. It gives me the commitment to do the treasury. It gives me the commitment to, you know, do all these other things. And then, you know, that's at group level. And then, of course,
I was an armed forces liaison officer to one of our intergroups for 4 years. And it was a service position that I had no idea. It was a brand new position. It had never been done before. And in the UK, and of course, somehow they elected me to do that, because I probably was wearing a green khaki-coloured green T-shirt at the time. And I thought, yeah, he's qualified, he can do that. I had no qualifications whatsoever in the military background. And yet I'd done that. And, you know, that was fun. I remember doing a presentation in front of about 50 welfare officers in a big military establishment in England. And that was a weird one, because I had to cater my share towards non-alcoholics, or cater my presentation and questions and answers to people who do not necessarily suffer from alcoholism. And basically the military said to AA, we think we might have a problem with some of our employees. And we're like, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. So they invited us to see what AA could offer them. And so therefore we'd done a presentation in front of, you know, about 50 welfare officers. At the end of the Q&A stuff, some guy approached me and said, Paul, he said, what would it take for you to facilitate some AA meetings in Afghanistan? And I thought, oh my God. And I said, well, I'm thinking off the cuff now. And I said, well, we could do with a room. And he said, would a tent do okay? And I said, yeah, a tent will work. And he said, and I said, some chairs? We'd like some chairs. I said, I can bring the literature. We can bring, you know, our own literature over from England. And he said, and you'll need some fans because it can get 50 degree heat in there. And I thought, my God. And I said, but, you know, what would you expect from us? And he said, well, you'd have to do some basic training. And I was like, oh my God, I'm about to get conscripted into the war. And that's how my head was spinning out over this. And he said, you know, choose a team of people that would be up for basic training, real basic training. He said, basically, if we have an insurgent attack, we get mortared. You know, when we say run, we don't want you as alcoholics to turn around and go, no, I'm not doing that. So, and he said, and we don't want to shovel bits of you up and send them back to your family, so we'd rather you all be in one piece. And I thought, okay, yeah, this can be done. However, that never happened, because several months later I got a letter saying, thank you for your presentation, but we'll handle it in-house. Mm. So that was a bit frustrating and, yeah, exciting at the same time for one of my service commitments. Basically, especially that one, it's kept my head out of my own problems. When I'm stuck in my head, my objectivity dissolves extremely quickly, and I see no solution, I have so much emotional investment in the outcome of a certain situation, and I need some kind of objectivity. So therefore, sponsorship is one of my number one go-to plan to give me that objectivity. Service is another way for me to remove myself from my stinking thinking. My ego is always on my back, just tapping away in the hope that I might be susceptible to some strange thoughts. So service is incredibly important. You know, at EURIPA, going back to EURIPA, that's what we try to encourage hugely amongst the young members, and get those young people fully involved in service, because it is life-saving. That's been my overview, and continues to be my overview of the service structure of Alcoholics Anonymous. So, yeah, I think, yeah.
Thank you. Tim, what's your experience in service?
Of course I've heard the same things, like it'll keep you sober, and you know, I don't necessarily if I agree with that. That sort of seems like a false promise, although I get the sentiment, and I agree with others in what they're trying to say. And you know, a personal experience is, in my area in Canada, it was, recovery was pretty young, like young as far as it hadn't been around. long. I lived in a little community on an island in on the Pacific in Canada, and so I took the, I think it was in my first month, like the first time I ever showed up, and somebody gave me a set of keys, and you mentioned keys, and I was like, wow, I got keys. You know, and for me at that time, it was a pretty big deal that people were trusting me with anything. Anyway, so it was a Sunday morning meeting, and, you know, I was 30 days sober for the first time ever since I started drinking, and I thought it was a pretty big deal, and I deserved an award. Anyways, it was a Sunday morning meeting, and I was new in recovery, and I thought I had it all figured out. And what am I trying to say here? Eventually, there came a Saturday night where I decided that drinking was a better option than recovery, more than once. And, you know, I'd get it in my head. I was planning, I was going drinking, and nothing was going to stop me. And then I'd see these keys, and I'd be like, fuck, I got to open that damn meeting tomorrow morning. So in that sense, service kept me sober, and it may or may not have saved my life. And you know, service, we talk about service a lot here, and you know, now that I've sort of been banging around here a while, you know, service, while it is opening up meetings, while it is chairing conventions, while it is you know, greeting people at the door or making coffee, you know, what I've learned is service is just like a way of thinking and a way, it's really a solution to one of my dilemmas, which is like self-centered fear, and that I'm the only one that feels this way, and I'm, it's never going to stop, and you would do the fucked up shit I would do if you felt like I did. And service helps me think of others, and it helps me get out of that stinking thinking, like was mentioned. And you know, I've come to realize that service is like answering the phone when somebody calls. It's returning a text, even if you don't feel like it. But it's someone just saying, "Hey, how's it going?" Because you never know when that might fucking save someone's life or might save your own. Service is like giving someone a hug because you can. Service is, you know, like it's there's so many ways we can be of service, and what this idea of service is going to help keep me sober has helped me realize is how many ways I can be of service in life in general. And it's kind of a paradoxical thing, like And we talk a lot about the power of one alcoholic helping another, being without parallel, and this kind of idea, and the magic that happens when we do that. And that's what service is all about for me. For some reason, when I help you, it helps me, which enables you to help someone, which, you know, it's perpetual. And the more we do it, the better we get, or at least that's how it appears. So, yeah, it's a big word, and you know, it's changed my life, you know, and today sometimes I'm able to think of someone other than myself, and that's because I said yes to service, because you guys told me that, and I saw the people who were doing service had a little bit more of a glint in their eye, they had a little bit more of a calm demeanor, they had a little bit more of a understanding of what was happening here. And and, you know, being a good alcoholic, I wanted some of that. And I wanted, when I got some, I wanted more. And I believe it's really one of the things that keeps us all here and keeps it attractive and keeps it functioning. You know, like a bunch of drunks, we're having a European convention with people from all over the world. And you know, how the hell does that work? But it does, because of service, I think.
Thank you. Now we have a couple of minutes left. Let's talk about a bit about future. There's the Poland was chosen to organize the next year Europa. Do you, Angela, do you have anything to say as a former, I mean, with experience to Mihail or any?
Yeah, so this year there were really strong bids. A bid is when a committee from a certain area comes to the convention and they say, we want to have that convention here next year. We want to host it. And this year there were really strong bids. So Warsaw, Poland, who ended up, of course, being the winner in the end. And then Slovenia and also Scotland came. This year was the 10th EuRIPA. So next year will be the 11th EuRIPA. And, you know, as a member of the board for the past 5 years, I've seen that process that happens in the boardroom, how many, like, different thoughts, you know, go into, like, making a decision. Everyone's has different opinions, like, oh, we, like, there's so many strengths, especially this year, like, those bids were all so, so good, you know? As the EuRIPA board, like, our main purpose is really to take the message to the EuRIPA region. We just felt like Poland, one of the things that we were saying was, it seems like there's this energy like building up there. We need to like take advantage of that because it's going to explode, you know? And one of the best things to see what's happened in the past with the EuRIPA is after a place is hosted EuRIPA, they can start their own conventions that continue for years after that. They start their own YPA groups. For example, Italipa, the Italian Young People's Convention, was started after EuRIPA was in Rome 5 years ago. And we'll see what will happen with Poland next year. We're excited for the future.
Thank you. And Mihail, you can have the final words if you want.
So as was mentioned, we managed to get EuRIPA to come to Poland next year, and this is an extreme privilege for us. We are very grateful to all the people who participated in EuRIPA, to the board, to the hosting committee of Barcelona for making the current EuRIPA happen, because if it wouldn't happen, we wouldn't have the opportunity to make the bid. There are already a lot of ideas how to get a lot of people coming. We have cooperation with our local structures in Poland, so we hope that we are going to be able to spread the EuRIPA message across Poland and countries in Central and Eastern Europe, so people can find out about this initiative, and so we can carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic. Finland is not that far from Poland, so if you're sitting, I mean, like, what I wanted to say is, like, at EuRIPA I really feel a part of something bigger, something greater. This is something that I feel on every convention and conference of AA. In my home group in Prague, there's like 30 of us, in usually 30 of us that I see regularly on the meetings. It's kind of, willingly or not willingly, it makes me start to feel that I'm not a part of a greater whole. But when I go to the convention and see hundreds of thousands of alcoholics, it really makes me feel that I am a part of something bigger and I belong to something. And for me, as a person who was always isolated and feeling that wherever I went, there were two groups, me and the rest of people, this is something really amazing. Yes, and the feeling of being lonely and isolated is as similar if you're drinking somewhere alone in the woods or if you're drinking in a bar full of people. It's like it's the same feeling. It's precisely the same real. So if you're sitting there and listening to this and thinking that you're alone and you're not being understood, you're not alone. And we do understand, because everybody was here through our own private hell. And if you don't have plans for the next year, book a flight to Poland. We love Finnish people, and you're more than welcomed. We are waiting for you with open arms. Yeah, so thanks.
Thank you.